Welcome into the penultimate episode of Live from West End. Right now, it is April 19th, and by May 1st, you will see an entire new sports editorial board. Me, Sam, and Anish will all be gone onto different things out of Vanderbilt. It will definitely be weird. And the three of us will talk next week about, you know, our times at Vanderbilt, specifically the hustle, and reflect on our experiences. This past week, a lot's been happened. Vanderbilt got swept by Texas A&M. They then beat Lipscomb and Florida. This is with baseball. Mark Byington brought in now a lot of good transfers, two from Virginia Tech, one from Davidson, one from James Madison. I think there's a lot to talk about. Which one do you guys want to talk about first?
I'll leave it up to you guys. You know, the seniors leaving, so
yeah,
it's up to you guys.
Let's talk about men's basketball. So yeah, let's do it. Mark Byington, there's a lot of different transfers that come in. Who out of the transfers that have come is the most exciting to you?
Well, I think, you know, the two Virginia Tech transfers have a lot of potential. Obviously, that's a Power 5 program in MJ Collins and Tyler Nickel, the two transfers that Vanderbilt got. And I think, you know, they both have enough size on the wing. They're going to kind of play that two or three spot for Vanderbilt. They've shown, you know, a pretty solid ability to shoot and score at the Power 5 level at Virginia Tech. So those two guys are definitely on my list of people to watch for next season. And as I said, you know, they're young guys. I think, you know, Tyler Nichols is a sophomore. I believe MJ Collins is a sophomore as well. You know, I've got a lot of hope for those guys going forward.
MJ Collins, seven of his last 10 games at Virginia Tech, averaged just over 40% from the field. He had a very solid freshman season as well, leading all of Virginia Tech's freshmen in minutes played. And although Virginia Tech didn't make a March Madness appearance, he was key for them in their NIT run. 6'4", shooting guard, 7.4 points a game. He's a guy that you can look for, specifically at the free throw line, averaging 84.4%, someone that will be getting a lot of playing time for the Commodores, potentially a starter.
Yeah, I really like Tyler Nickel just because I love shooting, and he shot just under 40%, like 39.9, from beyond the arc. So I'm excited to see him. He's a lengthy forward. Good defender. Obviously, we'll need to work on a lot of parts of his games, but he was a four-star out of high school for a reason. He's got the measurables and some experience now to show for it. So I'm intrigued about what he might bring. Obviously, the SEC is a different beast, but he was in a Power 5 before and has had some success in it too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as you said, Nickel, he seems like a great shooter, shooting just around 40% from three. And Vanderbilt didn't really have that this year in their team. There were just weren't enough shooters to make a run. And obviously they only won nine regular season games this past winter and fall. So I think Tyler Nickel will be a great addition to the team.
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, the problem at its core this season for Vanderbilt was honestly, I mean, it was two things. It was a lack of size down low and a lack of shooting from outside, which are like the two ways you score, obviously. So it's not saying that much. But it was like, you know what? Like the paint would have opened up more if we were lights out shooting from three-point land. Or, you know, if we had more, obviously, help down low, it might have opened up more shots. This is a kind of two-way relationship. But either way, they do need to improve on their shooting, which will open up the rest of the offense.
I want to talk about the Davidson transfer, Grant Huffman. 5.4 assists per game, 12.9 points, 5.2 rebounds. And although he was just 29% from the three-point line and 66% from the free-throw line, he is a guy that a lot of people are excited about. Ezra Magnon was never known to be the best three-point shooter, but he was a great facilitator and great ball handler. And people think he can really help replace Emmanuel. I know it's tough to do that, but the Commodores, I would say one of the Commodores' few bright spots last year was their backcourt, and with Magnon and Lawrence leaving, Huffman can be a big addition.
Yeah, and it's experience as well. I mean, he's played 4 years already and gotten, you know, averaged 34 minutes last year, 31 minutes in his junior season. So he has the minutes under his belt, and that's important for a lot of these guys. You know, we were just talking about bringing in their sophomores. They're young, and that's great, but you do need that guy who's going to lead you, and that was Mannion for us in the last 2 years with a lot of experience. So hopefully Huffman can be that, and he's still a big guard. He's 6'4". So I think they're building a team that has a lot of length and identity defensively.
I completely agree, Sam. And I think, you know, as you said, Grant Huffman really brings the experience to this roster. Tyler Nickel and MJ Collins are both young guys, and you hope Grant Huffman can maybe lead this backcourt to kind of replace Ezra Mannion, basically. And you know, Davidson's not a huge school, and, you know, it's not quite the SEC, but I could see Grant Huffman fitting in nicely to this Mark Byington offense.
About 15 years ago, there's a point guard from Davidson that got drafted 7th pick by the Golden State Warriors. His name was Steph Curry. So let's just look at this roster and the landscape, who the Vanderbilt Commodores lose, who they gain. They bring back J.Q. Roberts and Van Allen Lubin. They lose Jason Rivera-Torres, likely Colin Smith. I'd say those are the big guys. Yeah. Lawrence and Mannion as well. But you got Collins, Nickel, James Madison's carry, and then two signees from high school. I think in the 2.5 weeks that Byington's been the head coach, he's really shown that he wants to develop this roster quickly, and Vanderbilt is giving all the resources he needs, because let's think about the offseason last year. Their main additions were Tasos Kamateros and Velan Allen Lubin and Evan Taylor, who was like 30% from the 3-point line. I think this is such a better offseason already thus far, and I'm sure they're already putting in a lot more NIL funds this year than they did last season.
Yeah, it's about roster construction. You know, at the end of the day, we looked at last year's team, and obviously it hinged around a missing number five piece that wasn't completely Stack's fault, just because of the suspension of Lee Dort. But it was still a badly constructed team. And, you know, obviously you have to blame Stackhouse for that, because he's responsible for roster construction. But then when he put on his coaching hat, he realized that his team couldn't have success because it wasn't built to have success. So the first step is having a team that has an identity. And if you're going to have an identity, you have to think, all right, do we want to be long defensively and shoot the ball well? And that's where he started. So you just have to know what you're doing going into it. And I think I see some of that vision.
Yeah, and I think, as you said it perfectly, Sam, Stackhouse's roster construction was just imperfect in every way. There was such a lack of size in the paint, no shooters. I think what I've seen from Mark Byington so far already this offseason has been more impressive than what Stackhouse did last year. Tasos Kamateros, Evan Taylor were both really weak guys on the perimeter. They were, you know, they were hyped up to be able to shoot the three ball, but did not execute in the season. And so I think getting these younger transfers too, because obviously both of those guys were graduate transfers, just provides a room for development for Mark Byington's program. And, you know, we'll see what happens next year. I don't expect this team to be the best that it'll be next year. Just, you know, it's Mark Byington's first year, yeah. But I've got faith.
Will, for you Byington in.
I'm Byington inning.
There you go.
I want to talk about one thing, and it's the big man that everyone on campus is looking for Vanderbilt to bring. I think once you get a really solid potential, you know, former four-star recruit, maybe a freshman from somewhere that averaged 10 to 12 points a game, 5 to 7 rebounds per game, maybe even more, I think you get that and you have a very young roster that can compete. I don't think overnight you're going to be an NCAA tournament locked. You might be predicted by SEC critics to still be 13th, 14th in the conference, but I think with Byington, a decently respectable roster like it's becoming, it's on Byington now to really turn it around.
Well, the big man is the next, you know, key to this process that, yeah, Byington needs to get. I'd love to see him get definitely one big man that can play the five, if not two. I think two would be, yeah, helpful to just add depth to that position. Van Allen Lubin will be staying for next year, at least we think so, and you know, I think he'd be a great player at the four position. I don't think he's quite lengthy enough to play the five like he did this year. So I think if you get a true, you know, 6'11", 7-footer in the portal, yeah, it could be really helpful.
I think he did well at times, obviously, but you just worry about an injury. You know, you worry about, yeah, the same thing happening this year, and then you're reliant on him. So, yeah, ideally you get two. And if I were, you know, in the recruiting area for basketball, I'd turn on two games from this year and be like, do you understand why we have to get the 6'10", 6'11" guy? Like, please. But yeah, I mean, we're still waiting on that. So we'll see.
I am so excited. This men's basketball team, Byington seems like the right hire. I think when we talked 5-6 weeks ago before Byington was here, it was quite a depressing podcast room. I think now it's more optimistic.
For sure.
We'll see what happens there, and we'll keep you all followed and covered in. Let's transition to baseball, where the Vanderbilt Commodores were swept by the number one Texas A&M Aggies last weekend. They then went back and got back in their winning ways, beating the Lipscomb Bisons 15-4 on Tuesday, and then Florida 10-5 on Thursday. What do you think, Sam? Just talk about what went well in the LSU series, or what you saw went well, what didn't, and then what do you think could have been lost the week after against Texas A&M?
Yeah, I mean, the bats were going, right? That's the first and foremost, is that, like, we did still give up 10 runs in the first game against LSU and 6 runs in the second. Obviously, an amazing pitching performance from Carter Holton in the third game, but it starts with offense and it starts with scoring early. I don't have the stat in front of me, but I think they've got an unbelievable record when they score first and when they score quickly, and they've been doing that, and obviously that just did not happen against A&M. They were shut out twice, and then in the third game had come alive, it seemed, offensively, going up 4-0. But, you know, there's silly errors as well. I think that's a huge thing. And LSU, the games that we won, they cut that out, and they did not really make those, like, giving free runs away, and they certainly did that in the A&M series. It's just about defense making the basic plays.
I agree, and I think the LSU series provided a lot of hope for Vanderbilt fans. You know, they won 2 of 3. It looked like they were trending in the right direction heading into College Station, Texas A&M, their next weekend series. And Texas A&M was just really disappointing. The offense wasn't there. We scored, I think, only 6 runs over the 3 games. Our pitching was pretty abysmal on the first game of the series. They gave up, let's see, 17 hits to Texas A&M. And don't get me wrong, Texas A&M is a great team. You know, they're number one in the country for a reason right now. But Vanderbilt is also a great team, and losing all 3, getting swept on the road, was a little embarrassing for the Commodores. But, you know, as you said, Wolf, they had a great win over Lipscomb, and they had a solid win last night over Florida. So maybe they're getting this thing back on track.
This was, I would say, the microcosm, the biggest symbol of the weekend. Across 25 innings of work, Grace said in her column, the Vanderbilt offense collected 17 hits and 4 runs through 91 at-bats. So 91 times someone is at-bat, you only have 4 runs and 17 hits. That means 19% of the time you're getting on base. That is think about that as a batting average, just nothing short of abysmal. And they got that back going against Lipscomb. I think the home field advantage is so, so important. The Commodores now have won 16 straight games at the Hawkins Field. What do you guys think Hawkins Field brings, you know, to a college atmosphere? We've all gone to games, and I think it's so fun to watch, go to a game, and it's really a state-of-the-art experience that the Commodores really need to win games right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's familiarity.
Yeah.
And, of course, in the SEC, home field matters so much. Going away to a hostile environment is very difficult, and for whatever reason, you saw it in the pitching. I want to correct what I was saying, which Vanderbilt did have more errors in the A&M series, but it wasn't completely erased in the LSU series. It's something they need to work on overall. But it was mainly, I mean, the pitching, and Carter Holton had a very bad outing, and you do expect him to clean it up. You need him to clean it up if you want to make any kind of run. But, yeah, it's a tough place. Hostile pitchers coming in, they're not used to – it's little things like being used to your bullpen – and just like the way you walk out to the mound, it's all a mental battle. And looking at the backstop is like they do it every day in practice. And when you do that and you get the reps in, you become familiar with it. And so it's tough to go away, especially for a pitcher.
I agree. It's been interesting to see how Vanderbilt has really struggled on the road this year. Obviously got swept at South Carolina, got swept at Texas A&M. It's a little bit concerning because, you know, when you get into the postseason, you're not going to be at home. College World Series is in Omaha, so you got to get ready to be able to play on the road, play in places you're unfamiliar with. And I think the biggest thing, I will give Vanderbilt pitching a little bit of a break. They've had some serious injuries in the last couple weeks. Andrew Dukanich, obviously out for the year with Tommy John. Sawyer Hawks, still out. I don't really know the status on him. You know, Tim Corbin's very...
Devin Futrell's
out. They've got some big injuries in the bullpen. It's a little bit concerning. Hopefully Devin Futrell will come back for next weekend. I heard he's not back this weekend. So, you know, if you can't have the pitching, the offense has to be there, and it wasn't there against Texas A&M.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, just talking about home field advantage, is how much this bullpen is leaning on freshmen. I talked about it in my column, how well the freshmen were doing. And when you go away and you're going to an environment that you're really not used to, it just like it steps up the intensity of the game. And for young guys, like, it's not easy to just make that change. You know, that needs to be the job of the veterans to make sure that, you know, everyone is prepared to walk into a hostile environment.
I think you're right. Let's transition to the MLB really quickly. Jack Leiter, former Vanderbilt pitcher, got his first MLB start on Thursday at noon. He let up 7 runs, really, really not great. But I think he will get back into a groove. I think there's a mix of, you know, like being really nervous in an MLB type of setting, as well as the Texas Rangers were a very injured bullpen, and they needed someone that maybe Leiter needed a few more months to be ready.
Yeah, it was really exciting to watch Leiter. I watched his first, I think he pitched about 3 innings, and I watched him on Wednesday or Thursday, whenever it was.
Thursday at noon.
Thursday at noon, that's right. And I was a little bit, it was tough to watch. He obviously got shelled a little bit on the mound and gave up 7 earned runs, which was just tough. But I don't think this is the last you'll see of Jack Leiter. He's such talent. He'll get a few more, you know, opportunities to pitch with the Rangers, I think. So I wish him nothing but the best, and I think he's going to be a key asset to that team in the future.
Yeah, and he's young. I mean, you guys said all what needed to be said about the performance. It wasn't great, but, like, he's 23 years old. So, you know, it's a projection pick, and this kid's in his young 20s. I mean, he's our age, and he's pitching on an MLB stage, and that's worth something. So you got to make the best of your opportunities, and hopefully his next outing will be a little better. But, you know, it's a first step, and it's reps either way.
Yeah, I think, like, Aaron Judge didn't make a Major League Baseball roster till he was, like, in his late 20s. That happens all the time. So definitely he has a bright future, son of Al Leiter, and he was a Vanderbilt legend. Was unable to win the national championship. I think it was his sophomore year, but he was so solid.
I mean, that team would have won back-to-back if it wasn't for the COVID year.
Uh-huh.
And then even when they got slightly weaker, they still had Rocker and Leiter, the 1-2 punch, and those two brought them to the College World Series final. I remember watching that, and obviously I think they went up 1-0 in games and lost the second two, but that was really just a matter of, like, I think it was Rocker, I want to say, who pitched that first game.
Yeah, he had a really tough game.
Well, either way, I just remember their bats kind of let them down, and the pitching wasn't necessarily the problem. It was tough to watch is all I remember.
The 1-2 punch with Rocker and Leiter, though, was insane. I mean, think about that. Two top 5 draft picks.
Where's Henry at the time?
Team.
In high school, thinking, oh, I'm going to go to Vandy. This is what baseball's going to be like every year.
Exactly. And I was like, wow, 2 top 5 draft picks on the same team pitching the 1-2 games in this weekend series. I'm surprised they didn't win a national championship. Obviously, you know, Vanderbilt's won 2 in 14 and 19, but what an incredible team.
Incredible. Well, exciting stuff for baseball. Hopefully they get back in the win column. I'm confident they can get a sweep against Florida. And let's talk about anything but Vandy.
Yeah, well, my anything but Vandy is that I'm moving on to professional life. And I got my start date. It's a month and a week from now, which is insane to say.
Like 5 weeks.
5 weeks from now is
Holy
unbelievable.
Broad.
I know. And so I'm starting to look at real estate. And I don't know. It's like it's the most exciting and, like, scariest process. My anything but Vandy is that it's just like, you're obviously signing on for a year, and it's like, oh my gosh, I get to live here, and that's amazing, and I have a home friend coming, and I know some people from my job, so I'm living with a couple other guys. But it's also like I'm moving to another state, and, like, one person is touring it, but I don't see the house before, and, like, that's a scary thing to put down, you know, multiple thousands
right
to a place you haven't seen.
Aside from the house, just just the move in general, how do you feel about, right, you leave elementary school, the next step's middle school, after middle school, high school, after high school, college, and now it's just like, yeah, okay, you're in the real world. What are the emotions you're feeling right now?
Sadness. No, I've always said, like, you know what, if I can look back and be like, these college years weren't the best 4 years of my life, like, I will be winning, because right now, like, it's just going to be hard to top. I've had the most unreal experience at Vandy. I love it here. The friends, the people, my abroad experience, the city has just been nearly like unmatched. So I couldn't say enough good things about being here, and I just hope that I can match it like moving forward. So it's sad. I'm excited to have real person money. And luckily, like I said, I do have a friend from home who's following me in my move. So it does feel like there's a little bit of continuity, which I think is the tough part, is like you go to high school, or often I went to a different high school from like middle school. So like it was a reset button going into high school, and then it's a reset button for college, and then it's a reset button after college. So it's sometimes like a little, the cyclical nature is a little frustrating, but luckily I do have at least like one or two people who I've known in the past, and that kind of carries it on.
Hey, I like that old abandoned church, that one you were showing me. Yeah, that thing looks sick. I mean, I'm not even going to lie. Like, I would want to live there. An abandoned church. Like, why not?
It's a converted. Yeah, that's right. It's a converted chapel. And that's still in the top two for our choices. So.
And you're living with friends that you worked with last summer?
So two of them are friends I worked with and lived with last summer. And one of them is a friend I've had for, you know, decade and plus, and went to middle school, high school, all that together.
Great. That's awesome. And Sam will be on the podcast next week, where all we will be doing is reflecting on our 4 years at the Hustler.
Gosh.
That'll be emotional. Okay, I'll go next. I'll go in a similar type of setting. For me, like the past few weeks, I've been trying to, everything I've been doing is, this is my last X.
Yep.
And it kind of changes your perspective. Like, we go to the same bar every Thursday night. Like, last night was the last time I'm going to go there. So, like, this is the last time I'm going to go to Broadway on a Thursday night. Or it's like, I remember the last basketball game I went to. I said, this is the last basketball game. And then all that. And I think when you do it, it just kind of, you kind of feel like you're like a father. Like, you feel like you're like a parent, an adult, and you're like reflecting. I think the only advice I would give to like Henry and all the other students is, Just live it up. Don't take yourself too seriously, but take the work seriously. Take school seriously. But like college, I think college is really much like a sheltered playground. Like you're meant to try new things, but you also have Vanderbilt as like a shelter in a sense of, okay, if you fail, miss up here and miss up there, you always have something to fall back on, which is really nice. And just enjoy it. Try new things. And that's what like I think we did really, really well. I wouldn't change anything for anything. Even our COVID freshman year, like it freaking sucked. But like,
I had a friend.
We wouldn't have
known
anything different.
Yeah, I had a friend who was at Georgetown the whole year, who was online the whole year, never came in person.
That's crazy.
With Henry's sister.
Yes.
With my sister.
Right. Henry's sister goes to Georgetown and is friends with this friend, so they both know they were online the whole first year. We, as opposed to them, were in person. So yes, it was super tough, and like, I'll be the first to grumble about some of the policies, but you know what? Like, we were here, and that's like a special like thing of our time.
Yeah, and every generation was affected by COVID. For us, like, at least we weren't infecting our parents or stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't
lose our jobs. Which,
yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, I felt a lot for, you know, the kids that graduated in 2021. You lost your senior year of college. You go into the workforce, and then all you know
in
is Zoom.
Like, yeah, yeah.
And yeah. But no, I would just say to all the younger people, enjoy it. Good things eventually need to come to an end. And I think 4 years is the perfect time for college. If it's anything more, you would do things differently. You would have less of a sense of urgency.
Well, I think that's great advice, Wilf. And you know, now that you've done a couple of these last things, you'll get to come back to Nashville next year.
Yeah.
I hope you come and see us at the Hustler.
I
hope you do.
I promise.
And you get to come to some games. And at that point, you can just tweet about it and, you know, just be a fan at that point after the fact that you're a sports editor. But all right, for my anything but Vandy, I'm going to go half Vandy, half not Vandy. I'm breaking the rules a little bit. But, you know, it's my last episode on the podcast for this semester, so I have to do it, I feel like.
Tell everyone what you're most excited to this summer after that.
Okay, so this summer, I'm definitely excited for the warm weather. but I'm going to be able to golf a lot and, you know, get outside. I'm a big fan of the summer. I hate the winter, so this is like my peak time right now. I'm doing a cool internship with the USGA in June, so I'm very excited for that. But, you know, definitely push out some content this summer for the Hustler, which will be fun.
That's great.
But anyway, to my Anything But Vandy, I first want to talk about Gordon Sargent returning for his senior year.
Good
this
call.
Was big. Vanderbilt's going to lose three seniors after this season, and I was worried if Gordon Sargent went, there'd be one remaining starter for next year, and that would be concerning. So it's going to be good to have Jackson Paris and Gordon Sargent back for another season. It'll be a huge confidence boost for the team in terms of ability and confidence. So I think, you know, it's great that Gordon Sargent is returning, and you know, he'll have his tour card back for the 2025-26 season on the PGA Tour. But finally, to my other part of the Anything But Vandy is I'm a little disappointed that Scottie Scheffler won the Masters. I know you were watching Wilf last weekend. I think
that disappoints you.
Well, I like Scottie Scheffler. Don't get me wrong. It's just he wins so much these days. I feel like I've had enough of him. I feel like
he's such a good guy.
Like, but
Tiger at least had,
I wanted
had,
something else.
Tiger had issues with his wife and like off the course issues. Like Scottie's just a great guy, it seems like.
No, that's true. I'll give you that. I don't dislike Scottie. I just wanted to see a new winner, someone who hasn't won the Masters in
Max
the past.
Max Homa?
I would have loved to see Max Homa, Colin Morikawa, or Ludvig Åberg win that thing. But on to the next major, PGA Championship at Valhalla coming up in May, so it'll be fun to watch that.
Yeah, and before we close out as well, I want to give a special shout-out to fellow co-host on this, Andrew Wilf. We had our year-end awards, and Wilf won the Skip Bayless Award for Excellence in Sports Journalism. And he won't tell you there, honestly. Like, I had to pry to get that information from him. So, I mean, it's an astounding award, obviously. He's done an unbelievable job as sports editor this year. I've watched this kid come from freshman year and work on his craft and work on his leadership skills, and he's just done an unbelievable job, and anyone will tell you that. So it's really well-deserved, but I wanted to make sure I gave that shout-out because he wouldn't have done it himself.
Means a ton, yeah. I mean, for me, when I came as sports editor, the biggest thing was just make it 1% better. Bryce Smith, Justin Hershey, and Simon Gibbs left it in a really good spot, and I just wanted to make everything 1% better and continue the tradition of great sports writing. Skip Bayless is a really generous donor to the Vanderbilt Student Media, and he does an award every year for, like, one sports writer, and I got to win it. I'm the sixth winner, and you know, I felt confident. I had a good feeling, but when it happened, I definitely was emotional because it was like a what's next? Because I've been thinking about this kind of since freshman year, and I was really, really excited, and I'm really, really grateful. And it's so full circle that we had him on the podcast last week, and it's weird. We just have like a few more days left here at the Hustler, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
I'm going to second that sentiment, Sam. I couldn't imagine someone more well-deserving of the award, just all the time that you've given in the last 4 years, Will.
Thank
so,
you.
Really, congratulations.
Thank you so much. And, Henry, have a great summer. You're going to be on the pod a lot the next 2 years.
next 2 years.
And
Let's
me,
go.
Sam, and Ansh will be on next
Close
week.
Close it out. Get
Thank
sentimental.
You.